To a new podcast from Snowdonia National Park Authority. Starting in January 2021, in our 70th year of designation as a national park, each month we will bring you one podcast in Welsh and one in English on different topics relating to life here in Eryri. I'm Angela Jones and I'm Snowdonia National Park's Partnership Manager. As this is being recorded during lockdown in January 2021, we're recording this online. We've already brought you the Welsh version discussing our hugely popular new ambassador programme. And here in English this month, we're looking at the special qualities of Snowdonia National Park. And what are special qualities? Well, these are the reasons for our designation as a national park. All national parks have a clearly defined list of special qualities, similarly to how World Heritage sites have a defined outstanding universal value, or special areas of conservation have species and habitats to protect. Our special qualities set out what makes this area unique and helps us all understand what needs to be protected and enhanced. They define what gives this area its unique sense of place. Here in Snowdonia, we have 9 of these, and I'm lucky enough to be joined by some fantastic guests to discuss some of them. Okay, so firstly, I'm delighted to introduce Dr. Angharad Price, who grew up in Bethel near Caernarfon and is currently a professor of Welsh at Bangor University. She's an award-winning novelist, and her novel of her mother's family history in the Maes Glasau Valley in Snowdonia was translated into English under the title The Life of Rebecca Jones by Lloyd Jones. And she has rewritten one of her outstanding poems, Genod Bryn yr Efail, into English exclusively for our ambassador programme, under the title The Girls, for which we are extremely grateful. Diolch yn fawr iawn. So thank you so much for being here today, Dr. Price, and we could discuss many of the National Park's special qualities, but perhaps those which are more pertinent to your career are the vibrancy of the Welsh language, Eryri as an inspiration for the arts, and of course the community cohesion which exists here in the area. And your poem Genod Bryn yr Efail, or The Girls, of course in English, touches so beautifully on all 3 of these elements. Has that been your experience of growing up and living in this area?
Well, yes, I was commissioned to write that poem for a book of photographs about Snowdonia. And it got me thinking, well, what does it mean to grow up in this area? You know, I grew up, I was here until I was 18. Then I went away to university, to England. Then I lived actually in Germany and on the continent for a while. Returned to live to Wales, but actually to Cardiff. But all the time I felt the pull of this area of Snowdonia, of northwest Wales. And I think that was a mixture of things, actually. I think it was the landscape, but also, as you mentioned, Angela, the Welsh language and the special culture that's characteristic of the Snowdonia area. So when it came to writing this poem, I had to think quite carefully, well, you know, what is it? How has it affected me? You know, what does that mean? And I thought, actually, what struck me was that many of us, that there were a group of us girls at school together, looking out through the school windows and seeing the mountains of Snowdonia. That's what we saw every day, and we didn't even think about it. As I say in the poem, it was just one of another school wall. And I thought, well, how does that affect us? And it did strike me that we'd all gone away after leaving school, but we'd all come back to live in the area. So that pull must be incredibly strong. You know, it's the area isn't rich in employment in many ways. You know, people have to forge their own living in a way a lot of the time. But we've all come back and we're all still friends. And I was wondering, does this, the particular landscape somehow lead to that, or does it encourage that, or does it inspire that? And I'm still not sure. I'm sure that it would be too facile to say there's a strong link between landscape and your way of life, but I'm asking the question anyway in the poem, that does the solidity of the landscape and the pull of the landscape somehow creates a path for your life and your friendships and your relationships with other people?
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a beautiful poem, and yeah, well, the first time I read it actually made me cry. I found it really emotional, and it picked up on those themes, you know, as you say, of being a child and not really seeing what is necessarily around you, but it's shaping you so strongly. And that theme of the landscape having this sort of integral but perhaps unrecognized impact on those who are raised here, perhaps, as you say, not truly acknowledged until you're not here, and potentially that is a reason for the inspiration that brings people back here also. And of course, you know, some very famous authors from the area, like T.H. Parry Williams, has that link between landscape and the arts and the people. It's so intertwined, the idea that you can't have one without the other. I mean, is that, that's something that you obviously have spent a lot of time looking at in your career as well. Is that true of authors from this area, have you noticed?
Yes, I think one thing people may not be familiar with when they visit the area, because, you know, you can admire the amazing landscape, the scenery is spectacular, you've got the lakes, the sea, the mountains, you've got everything. But also there's the invisible aspect of it, maybe to many people, and that's the culture. The literature that's been written, the paintings that have been painted, the community spirit. And in my daily job as an academic, I've spent a lot of time talking to people and introducing people to the wealth of literature, that all the writers that have come from this area. Is absolutely amazing, the number of writers, you know, really, really fine Welsh language writers who've grown up in Snowdonia, who've lived their lives here and who've written about it. And as you mentioned, one of those writers is a particularly fine poet, one of the great poets of the Welsh language in the 20th century, T.H. Parry Williams. Mm-hmm. He grew up in the tiny hamlet of Rhyddi, yeah, which is at the foot of Snowdon. But of course, like many of us, he had to go away, really, in order to truly appreciate what the area had given him. And, you know, many of his finest poems and essays talk about the Snowdonia culture, the area, that the impact the landscape and the community has on you. Another very wonderful writer is Kate Roberts, who lived just in the next valley along from Rhyddi. She grew up around the same time, both of them born at the end of the Victorian era, one of the classic writers of the Welsh language in the 20th century. And she, what she does as well in particular is describe the very the fascinating relationship between industry and landscape, industry and Snowdonia, you know, the slate industry in particular, and how the communities that grew up around the slate industry developed in a very particular way and created their own rich Welsh language culture. And you know, maybe visitors to Snowdonia at first glance don't appreciate that wealth of experience as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something we'll pick up, because we're also speaking to Roland Evans about the nomination of the Slate Landscape as a World Heritage Site as well on this podcast later on. So, yeah, very interesting kind of grounding for that also. And of course, this area has been described by some as the stronghold of the Welsh language. Has that been an important factor in the literature and the creative work that you've witnessed emerging from this region?
Definitely, because in order to write well, I think, especially if you're writing novels, I think even more so than poetry, the language needs to be a living, breathing language. It needs to be the language of community. It needs to be the language where people don't even realise they're speaking that language. You know, they're loving and hating and fighting and, you know, they're doing everything through the medium of Welsh. And I suppose in my poem, it's the same thing. You don't notice the language because you're there in the middle of it. You don't notice the landscape because you're there in the middle of it. And it's only when you go away and have different experiences that you look back and realise the richness that you had. And I think the fact that this is a stronghold of the Welsh language has been important in generating this rich literature and this rich culture, because it seems to grow naturally out of people's dealings with each other. And of course, there's a strong sense of continuity with the past. And I hope a strong sense of future as well, you know, that the language is here to stay. And that we should be, and that we are doing all we can to make sure that that is how things will remain. So the landscape, the language, the community, the people you grow up with, all of those things, I hope, come out in that poem that I wrote.
Yeah, absolutely do. I mean, as I said, I thought it was absolutely, really, you know, had a big effect on me emotionally when I read it, for sure. And yeah, it was a perfect encapsulation, I think, of all of those special qualities as we define them. You know, it sounds a bit harsh to define them out into what we need to recognise about the area, because they do all come together. They're all involved naturally with each other. But it is fascinating that, you know, those are some of the things that we're tasked as a national park to protect, and hopefully that will raise awareness for people and will help to, as you say, make sure that all of those elements are well looked after into the future. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
You're very welcome. It's been a pleasure.
I'm also incredibly fortunate to be joined today by Ben Porter, who's a naturalist, conservationist and wildlife photographer. Having spent most of his young life on Ynys Enlli off the Hume Peninsula, Ben has recently completed a degree in conservation biology. His photographs have featured in various publications and magazines, including BBC Wildlife magazine, Natur Cymru and British Birds. And in June 2020, Ben undertook a series of surveys for us in partnership with Natural Resources Wales and the National Trust, measuring the impact on the landscape of the lockdown period, and is therefore really well placed to discuss the special qualities of internationally important habitats, diverse landscapes, and tranquility and solitude. Thanks for joining me, Ben. And let's begin with that last one. You were surprised, weren't you, by the impact that tranquility, that you experienced that of that tranquility in June, when you were able to be out there in the national park almost alone. How on earth did that feel?
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely such a bizarre experience in a way, especially obviously on the more well-trodden or usually well-trodden paths such as Yrwyddfa, you know, being halfway up there. Just looking at, you know, you have to, because it's quite, you're doing quite a lot during the surveys. Obviously, you're taking notes, you're trying to keep an eye on what's going on at your feet, looking at the vegetation, you're looking at the birds and everything. So every now and then just have to stand there and just, you know, look around and just take it in and just really appreciate the complete silence, apart from maybe a bleating goat, bleating sheep, or the sort of mournful song of a ringousel from the crags, you know, up above, sort of ringing out. And obviously at that time of year, it's full of, you know, a lot of these areas are full of bird life. So there's meadow pipits singing, there's wheatears with their sort of scratchy song from the scree. And it is, you know, it is a very tranquil scene. And it was an absolute privilege to be up there during that period. And it does make you appreciate, you know, these areas, and it, you know, you totally understand why, you know, we all go up to these areas. We each have different reasons why we go to, you know, these amazing places. And yeah, I guess it's a challenge trying to have that balance, really, but absolutely amazing to be up there during that period.
Yeah, I guess that's what most people are searching for when they're heading up to the top of a mountain, aren't they? Obviously, Arrowhead isn't always like that, but yeah, it must have been wonderful to experience it exactly, and especially in that fantastic weather that we had as well, you know, so it allowed that bird life, if you like, to be out there in full force. And on that topic then of sort of internationally important species and habitats, which of course is another one of our special qualities, what was it that you actually noticed about that and how that had reacted to the lockdown?
Yeah, I mean, it was a really interesting period how lockdown ended up being in terms of our spring. You know, it started at the end of March and continued through to June in its sort of fullest form. And that was obviously the full breeding season for a lot of bird species particularly. So I was expecting more of the impacts to be the sort of immediate things on birds and things, because obviously, to a certain degree, habitats, plants, that sort of thing will take a lot longer and many years to show more gradual effects and changes. But even so, it was quite surprising in some of the areas, you know, in terms of the breeding birds. It was really obvious walking along the pathways. A lot of the paths that are normally well trodden, there were just like grasses coming up in between the sort of rocks and flowers flowering along the edges of the paths, and areas where there's popular gathering spots were just, you know, sort of full of grass and vegetation. And because of all this proliferation of vegetation along the paths, some species had decided to nest there as well. So, you know, there were meadow pipits and wheatears nesting in some places, sometimes in the cracks and crevices beneath or next to the path. And around some of the sort of lakes that are close to main paths, there were common sandpipers, which were breeding, which are quite a timid species and usually suffer a bit from human disturbance, because they won't nest somewhere which is being disturbed every day, for instance. And so, like, there were three pairs on one particular lake where, you know, usually there would be people there every single day, usually, you know, on your way up Arwyddfa. And similarly for things like weasel, again, another quite timid species that tends to steer fairly clear of human presence. You know, there were three or four pairs around Cwmidwell, and one literally as we were coming down the path, a fledgling came out from not too far away from the path itself. And the two adults were just, you know, literally meters away from me, sort of alarm calling and things. So it was obvious that they had nested like very close to a main footpath, mm-hmm. And taken advantage of the lack of people. But then there were some, you know, sort of scarcer plant species that had just sort of opportunistically come up from between the sort of cracks in the pathways and things. So it was a sort of a varied response. And that's just, you know, a 3 month period, isn't it, in one spring. It is interesting.
Yeah. It'll be, I mean, the plan is, we should say that you're going to go out and repeat those surveys next year as well. So it will be quite astounding to make that comparison, won't it?
It really will. Yeah. It will be very interesting to see, provided obviously everything, we'll see how things are back to usual or not. But I'm presuming there will probably be more people up there at least. So it will be interesting. And yeah, I took sort of fixed point images along the pathways as well, which give quite a visual representation of how things have changed. So I'll try and replicate, you know, where I took those last year and then take them again during that period of the surveys. Yeah, I mean, obviously, these areas, you know, they have some incredibly scarce species as well of flowering plants and things, which generally they're a bit further away from, you know, the main areas, a lot of the main pathways and things, for instance, on, you know, above Cwmidwell there on the slabs where you have the scarce Arctic alpines. And, you know, with some of those things, there wasn't really any difference to usual, as you know, might expect. But yes, it would be interesting. If you had that sort of situation over a few subsequent years, what would emerge, or what would happen? I was half hoping for like a snowy owl or something on the top of Arwyddfa, just in, but that didn't happen, sadly.
Maybe next time.
Maybe.
And of course, we mentioned you're really familiar with living in remote coastal areas, spending much of your time and still spending quite a lot of time on Ynysenlli, of course. But the National Park doesn't stretch down that far to the Llyn Peninsula, but it does indeed cover a significant stretch of coastline here in Eryri. And obviously, as well as the mountains and valleys, not everyone is that familiar with the coastline. And how important do you think it is that these areas are all part of the National Park?
Well, I mean, listen, I'm a bit biased considering I've spent half of my life on an island in the middle of, you know, off the same peninsula. But I think increasingly so, I think it's really important that we see the landscape as a sort of a joined up, you know, landscape scale sort of component where you're not just taking small areas in isolation. You know, you look at everything as a sort of interconnected system as it is. And so I think it's brilliant that there are these stretches of coast in Snowdonia that Snowdonia National Park are able to manage, because they're so, you know, the coast and our marine areas are often neglected, partly because they're a bit out of sight. You can't see what's going on the seabed, for instance, you know, but they're so important, and the impact they have on our environment, you know, just all the sort of cycles and things that help support all of our life, you know, support systems, they're so vital. And I think, yeah, I think it'll be really, it's just brilliant that we have those in this area now, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, whether there's more visitors coming to some of these areas as well, or whether it sort of throws a spotlight on. I know a lot of people like visiting, you know, sandy beaches and things for their holidays, but for me, like the rocky shore, like with rock pools and everything you can find in there, is one of the most exciting ecosystems as well. So
yeah, sure. Well, thank you, Ben. That's so fascinating. And yeah, it gives us a real insight to, as you say, all those different ecosystems that exist in this small area. So we really appreciate your time today.
No worries. It's been nice talking to you.
I'm also lucky enough to be chatting to Roland Evans, Assistant Head, Economy and Community Department in Cyngor Gwynedd, Gwynedd Council, who could talk at length about the many special qualities of Eryri. But I've asked today to focus specifically on historic landscapes, as he has been coordinating the current UK submission to the next UNESCO World Heritage Committee this summer for nomination of the Slate Landscape of North West Wales onto the World Heritage List, which is extremely exciting, and I imagine has been a huge amount of work. How is that going at the moment, Roland?
Well, yeah, you're right. It's been a huge amount of work for Gwynedd Council and all its partners, really. And it's probably true to say that much of this work's been simmering in the background for over 50 years, up till now, I should think. And it all stems from when some quite visionary and exceptional people recognise the value of our landscape in Llechwedd and in the abandoned Dinorwig quarry, and decided to safeguard those for the future and open them up for interpretation as visitor attractions, where Llechwedd now attracts hundreds of thousands of people annually, and the National Slate Museum as well, obviously, in Llandeiniolen and Llanberis. Mm. So it's been a long and lengthy process, and in the interim period, obviously, the industrial archaeology courses that are run by Plas Tan y Bwlch and the National Park have collected a huge amount of information over decades of time. In addition to CADW and the Royal Commission's research, we've got a huge evidence base to show the significance of the slate landscape, not only locally in Gwynedd, but internationally. Mm. And I suppose the work of developing this nomination has now been ongoing for about 10 years in reality, when we submitted an application to be included on the UK's tentative list, as it's called. So the short list of nominations that are presented by the United Kingdom to UNESCO, which is the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization. So in those 10 years, it's you know, it is a lengthy process, and we have to go through quite a few hurdles and meetings. And we've now reached our final hurdle, to be honest, in the process of inscription. And that final hurdle is a meeting of the World Heritage Committee, which is being held this year between June and July, and it's going to be held in China. We submitted our World Heritage nomination dossier, which is a huge document, and management plan and additional information to the World Heritage Centre in Paris in January 2020. And then, yes, we hope that our nomination will be inscribed at that meeting, the committee meeting that will be held this year.
Well, I've been lucky enough to actually see that dossier, and it's extremely impressive. So, yeah, congratulations on all the work that you've done so far. And what did you think? Why is it so important to have this lake landscape of this area recognised internationally? What is it? You know, could you? It's really hard to encapsulate this in a couple of sentences, of course. But what is it about it that's so important? Would you think, if you had to describe it to someone who knew nothing about it?
Well, I suppose in World Heritage terms, we have to look at something that's called what's outstanding about our landscape, mm-hmm. and how has it contributed to mankind at a global level. And I think here in Gwynedd, what we have is an exceptional example of an industrial landscape.
Yeah.
That's been formed by centuries of quarrying, working and transporting slate to international markets. And what Gwynedd demonstrates marvellously, or perfectly, I suppose, is every relevant element of the quarrying landscape. And they're all visible, they're all readable, and mostly accessible as well. So we're talking about that quarrying of stone, we're talking about the processing of stone, transportation of stone, the settlements and the communities that house the people and the workforce that worked in the quarries. And then we've also got the final use of that stone in roofing, in the slabs, in the crawia, in the fences, in the pavements, and even in our gravestones in this area. Mm. And what we see here as well is that amazing transformation from being an agricultural society to an industrial society. And it's so evident within the landscape. You know, the boundaries of the national park skirt most of our quarries, apart from the Prince of Wales and Gorsedda and Bryn Eglwys. And I suppose that's, you know, that the reason for that is that they were operational at the time, and the park wanted to exclude operational quarries.
Yeah.
And it also shows how we've been able to transform an agricultural landscape to an industrial landscape, and to do that without losing an indigenous culture and language. You know the Welsh yeah. language thrives within these communities. Mm. And we were also the major exporter of slate in the mid-19th century. Mm. And we must remember that we didn't only export slate, but we also obviously exported people, technology, expertise as well across the globe. So that impact needs to be celebrated, I think.
Absolutely. And that link between the communities and the land is so clear, isn't it? As you say, the growth or the transformation, if you like, of that the communities from agricultural to industrial, and still that very strong connection between the landscape and the communities even that exist today, and you know the legacy of that slate landscape as well. And what have you noticed about that in terms of, you know, currently, is that still something that people feel, you know, very connected to in your work on this nomination, of course, but even in your work every day with the council?
Yes, it's very true. You know, those communities are inextricably linked to the industry and the quarry that's formed them. And it's stronger in some communities than others. I think what we can see are obviously communities that have been developed by centuries of quarrying. But we've also got communities that have seen decline in quarrying as well. And where that decline and closure is longest, I think that link between the community and maybe the industry that formed them is weaker. And what we've seen through this project is, you know, most of these communities are extremely proud of their heritage and culture. Mm. But it might have been slightly lost over time. And as economic decline has been have been seen across the area. So we're developing this nomination not only to protect what's left of the slate industry and conserve our landscape, but also we're doing it to celebrate our a contribution to the world as a way of regenerating our communities, both economically and socially.
Yeah.
So, you know, most of these communities are extremely proud of what their forefathers achieved. And we need to, acknowledge the sacrifices that were made by our forefathers, the conflicts that have been the dubious source of some of the capital that supported the investment in the quarries, which is often linked to slavery.
Sure.
The harshness of life. And what we've been able to do is secure over 1 million of external funding through the National War Artillery Heritage Fund, Snowdonia National Park, Cronfa Eryri, European funding, and Gwynedd Council and Welsh Government. And we've got a project called Llechi. Now, as you know, Llechi means slate in Welsh, but also means your place in English as well. And the whole purpose of that project really is to reconnect communities with their heritage and culture, but also to use it as a tool to regenerate those communities as well. So we've been working with communities right across Gwynedd, which are part of this nomination, to develop art installations, interpretation, improve the linkages between the communities, and ensure that they, you know, we've been able to develop youth ambassador schemes, work with primary schools, and, you know, I'm talking about places like Bethesda, Llanberis, Deiniolen, Penygroes, right across down to Corris, Tywyn, Nabig and Olwyn as well. And we've also been working with landowners to talk about safety within the quarrying landscape, because, as we know, industrial landscapes can be very challenging and dangerous and unstable. So we're trying to work to communicate that safety message as well, that people can't just venture onto some of these post-industrial sites either, because some of them are inaccessible and extremely dangerous.
Wow, gosh, tremendous amount of work done. It sounds like, you know, you've been living and breathing this now for 10 years. So all the best to you. Good luck. Thank you so much for your time today, but good luck with the nomination, and we wish you every success in the summer.
Thank you very much. Diolch yn fawr iawn.
Wow, what a fascinating discussion, and thank you to all three of my guests for their time and insights. And we haven't even begun to discuss in detail renowned geology or recreation, leisure and learning, which make up all nine of the special qualities of the National Park. Perhaps we'll have time for those in a future session. But for now, let me thank you for listening. And if you'd like to keep up to date with all the authorities' news, feel free to follow us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Our next podcast will be on the 18th of February in Welsh on the Carnegie Landscape Partnership. Hwyl fawr, goodbye.